that I miss you. Glimpses of truth are for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine.
Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. Each week on this program, I bring people who are really at the cutting edge of science, technology, spirituality, so we can really understand the new reality that's coming to this planet. Tonight's guest, who's been investigating natural phenomena, he is a mathematician, I suppose, in some ways, a graphic artist, David Clapperton. Are you there, David?
Yes, hi, Alan.
How, is that a good introduction? How would you introduce yourself, actually?
I think that's a great introduction because I'm really sort of riding the line between art and science.
Right, that's why I was so interested in your work, and especially your work about the observations of nature. So let's just jump into what really brought us together was this observation about the sun and the moon. From the Earth's perspective, especially seen during the eclipse, is pretty much the same size. You know, it's the perspective somehow, and I don't think it was an accident. I think during the eclipse, the moon pretty much covers the sun, or the sun covers the moon in a lunar eclipse, I guess. But I think, and I've read this book called "The Who Built the Moon." Some people also are saying that the moon was an artificial satellite that was placed in orbit in order for the Earth to have a nice balance of life, so the oceans could have these tides that will filter the water and create also a tide actually in the atmosphere as well that will clean the atmosphere. And the moon was purposely placed, purposely designed to support life on planet Earth. Now, that's a little far out for a lot of people, but David has another idea. So, tell me your idea, David.
Well, I will second your mentioning that we came together over the coincidence of the sun and moon happening to match from the perspective of the surface of the Earth. And I should stress that it can match. It doesn't necessarily match because there is an interplay between the moon's orbit around the Earth and the sun's and the Earth's orbit around the sun. So, but it is nonetheless an astonishing coincidence. And there have been many sources, published sources, that have acknowledged the sheer craziness of it.
Yeah, but you're saying it's not actually coincidence. It's a natural phenomena of life itself.
I'm saying that these are what the scientific paradigm calls it a coincidence. So every source that I've researched, is... calls it a coincidence. Now, there's varying degrees to the language.
Except the people who say that the moon was artificially created.
I'm talking about the scientific
right.
So this is the best source that covers the coincidence specifically is a book called The Privileged Planet that just the first chapter actually covers it pretty extensively. And that's the only source that I've really found that focuses specifically on the coincidence of the sun and moon happening to be the same size. And they actually do a chart where of the other satellites in our solar system from the perspective of their respective planets. And, none of them appear the same except for Prometheus from Saturn, and Prometheus is shaped like a potato, so it zooms by. Not only is it a perfect circle, but it also zooms by super fast relative to the sun. So an eclipse from Saturn of Prometheus only lasts less than a second or a second at the most.
Okay.
But as far as the other theories go about the moon's origin, I don't go there normally. I tend to believe that it was planned, not to say that it was hauled into place by some kind of UFO or alien, but I do believe it is a product of intelligence, which I can only call off-world. I'll say off-world intelligence.
Are you getting to like a spiritual intelligence or like a creationist type intelligence? Is that what you're implying? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but are you?
I do think that it's the coincidence is trying to teach us something specifically. So it's not to say that it isn't spiritual. Learning is sort of a spiritual process, and but yet sometimes teachers can be hard on students if they want them to learn something. So what the applied effect of the sun and moon happening to match has created a very dualistic society where people see things as good or evil or black and white. You know, that people tend to default to a binary mentality. And
right, because we have these binary polarities in the sky, so it's
they
become symbols of everyday reality. We have day and night, we have male, female. We have a world full of polarities, it seems like, doesn't it?
Yes, yes, and this is what I don't think was accidental about it. I think that there is a reason for this in that it gets you looking at the nature of duality itself and, you know, realizing that there has to be a third entity in between any two opposing duals or whatever you want to call them.
What do you mean by third entity? What does that mean?
Well, I mean like a border or a seam between opposites.
Uh-huh.
There has to, you know, just looking at the hemispheres of the brain, for instance, like right and left, you know, art and science. Now, those seem to be fairly opposed, or, you know, some people would call them complementary. And this is another, this gets into alchemy, where you could see things as, you could frame things as positive, or you could frame things as negative. But there is a border in the brain, the corpus callosum, that negotiates between these two opposites, the opposite sides. So that's where the lesson to be learned is, so to speak. It's really at that line where the magic happens, I think.
But isn't that line like during the eclipse when the Earth, the Moon, the Sun all line up together? That seems to be a sort of magic moment in lots of religions and traditions, and it actually does feel sort of magic when those alignments happen. Would you say that's the scene, or are you looking at something else?
Well, I'm looking at something else, actually. That's the physical reality. The physical reality is that the moon happens to be in a spot where it can match the apparent diameter of the sun, and every so often you'll have a perfect sinking. Sometimes it's not a perfect sinking of the sun and moon. Sometimes you have an annular eclipse, in which case the moon doesn't fully cover the sun, and sometimes you have a super eclipse, in which case the moon blocks out the sun's corona, in addition to the sun's phase. So that's like the physical reality, but there's a reality sort of that's being eclipsed, for lack of a better word, behind that reality. And that's the reality.
That's what I want to talk about. So let's talk about that eclipse.
Well, that's where the magic is, if you're willing to study. I'm kind of a back office astronomer in that I've never seen an eclipse, but I've got a lot of books on them. I've done a lot of research on them.
Never seen an eclipse? They happen all the time. I mean,
well, not a total solar eclipse.
Well, a partial, even the partial ones are phenomenal because they change.
I have seen a partial, but I'm talking about a total solar eclipse where
dark,
sky darkens, and I've read enough about them. I've seen live web simulcasts of them, and that's, you know, it is a bit of an undertaking to see an eclipse. It depends. They don't happen very frequently, and you have to often travel to a far place, so I'm kind of waiting for one to come to me.
I think there will be. But talk about this other eclipse that you're referring to.
Yeah, well, what gets eclipsed is the coincidence, I'll get into the math of it, but that is what, you know, I've talked to a lot of people about this, and a lot of people just sort of don't validate it consciously. They might understand it on a subconscious level. It impacts their subconscious more than it impacts the conscious, I think.
What does exactly?
The sync, the apparent matchup between the sun and moon. So it, you know, it creates a dualistic type of belief system, like we were talking about, black and white, or day and night, or good and evil, or God and Satan, you know, whatever you want to call it. Any two great duals, male and female, it kind of gets people into that kind of mode of thought. And it's really unless you bring it to the surface, bring it to the conscious level, and really acknowledge the coincidence, and this is what I've done in my work, is take the variable of the coincidence, and that is to take the diameter of the sun and divide it by the diameter of the moon. And that's the only way that we can sort of make this coincidence materialize into something. And that's
Wait, back up. You were talking sort of about an esoteric eclipse, right?
Yes, before. Yes. This is,
and what did you mean by that?
Well, I mean to get beyond the
physical
duality.
The duality, I see.
Physical duality, right. And to look at the fact that it is a coincidence,
uh-huh.
You know, and it is a coincidence. And I'm not going to get into theology. I mean, I do believe it's still a coincidence. I think that it's a super coincidence. It's a super coincidence. But you can't say that it's not a coincidence, because until you can have a physical mechanism to describe it,
uh-huh.
then that's falsifiable. So that's why I can't get into theology, because theology isn't falsifiable.
And I guess even thinking that someone pulled the moon in place is sort of theological, isn't it?
It's falsifiable, yeah. It's not falsifiable.
It's theological in some sense. Okay, so
the difference between religion and science is falsifiability. In science, you know, that's another two great duels, religion and science. And I don't make value judgments. I'm not saying one is better than the other. In fact, those are probably the two greatest duels that are
Well, what about art and science?
Now.
Art, science, religion, art.
Well, religion and art are related. You know, science is more numbers, and religion is more words and images, I would say, you know, letters and images, symbols, that type of thing.
But I think the duality exists in us first, and then we make dualities of the world because of these two parts of our brain. I mean, we're seeing duality because we are made of duality in a way.
Well, that's certainly one idea, that this is a product of consciousness.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do want to have a way to explain it physically, and I have my own theories on how it is physically. And, you know, I don't, like I said, I don't want to get into theology, because once you open that can, there's a lot of, you know, people have different opinions.
That's right. It's endless. It's endless. So let's go back to what you were doing.
It's endless, yeah. So what I've done
in
my research is to take the actual width of the sun, the diameter, which is the sun diameter is 1392 kilometers, and the moon diameter is 3474.1 kilometers, and these are figures taken from Wikipedia, so it's a pretty objective source. And dividing the sun's diameter by the moon's diameter gives you a variable of 400.679, et cetera, et cetera. And this is to say that the reason the coincidence works is because the moon is 400 times closer than the sun, but the sun is 400 times bigger than the moon, or approximately.
Oh, okay. I get it. So that's how that works.
And now that's the only thing that we can grab onto about this coincidence. There's nothing else that we have that's tangible. I mean, we can talk about symbolically it speaks of duality, as we were talking about, black and white, black on one side, white on the other, sort of like a coin, like a, you know, a
right,
dime.
Heads or tails.
Favorite coin. Heads and tails, right. So it's kind of like the great coin in the sky. And I do think it's interesting that the word coincidence has that word coin in it. So coincidence, you could call it.
Right.
And the mathematics of that are 50-50. That's the mathematic ratio that a coin would imply, 0.5, 50%, whatever you want to call it. So symbolically, that's an important ratio to our species, because it's what allows distinction. It's what allows us to feel separate from nature, to be able to pick off a...
What allows us to feel separate from nature? What's the ratio?
What I would call 50-50 mentality.
Oh, okay.
Or 50-50 intelligence. Because we have 50-50 abilities, we can discern heads from tails on a coin.
Okay,
whereas,
I get it.
No.
Yeah.
And some other animals or creatures on the planet seem to also have the ability, you know, such as dolphins, which recognize themselves in the mirrors, and some birds. And so we're not alone, theoretically. I mean, I can't
I do think dolphins are actually smarter than humans. If you ever look at a dolphin's brain, they have the left and right, but they are more spherical. They're more developed, actually, dolphin brain. But anyway,
The acid test for 50-50 intelligence is whether you can recognize your reflection in a mirror. So,
well, I guess cats can, right? I mean, dogs.
Yeah, some different types of animals can, and others can't. Even some insects can, I think. But
really?
I haven't researched that. Yeah, I haven't researched it that thoroughly, but that's what I would say is an indication that some entity is 50-50 enabled, for lack of a better word.
So you figured out that the moon was 400 times smaller than the sun, and the sun was 400 times further than the moon from the Earth. So what does that mean?
Correct.
What's the bigger... So what, in a way? But I think you've discovered something else about that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, that's not a new discovery. In the literature, you can find that number referenced, and maybe I have probably about 15 or 20 sources that make note of it, although they are hard to find. But the bigger reality is, what is this trying to teach us?
Exactly.
Right, exactly. Like, obviously, for those who care to look, there's more to the picture than meets the eye. And
so let's get into that.
Yeah. Well, that's what my work is about. And, you know, this goes back a long time, and it goes back even to childhood, I got to say, where I would, I kind of had the sneaking suspicion that if 50-50 were somehow the base ratio of life, no structure could evolve, because there would have to be some kind of fundamental majority in order for anything to grow or change or develop. So I got to thinking, you know, this is going way back, and I was telling you when I was in college in 1991 that, you know, I was thinking about how we don't measure time properly, because we count one cycle of the Earth around the sun as a year, when a more complete number would be four cycles of the Earth around the sun.
Right,
It includes that extra day.
That extra leap year day,
Leap day. So, you know, this was just kind of idle thinking in college, and, you know, I was never really into college. I did end up getting a degree in a bachelor's in fine art later on, but...
But you were just thinking all these kind of abstract thoughts to yourself, and you came up with something.
I did, yes. It's just a loose trail of breadcrumbs, I guess you could call it, where I just picked off coincidence after coincidence, and ultimately, I could describe to you any number of reasons how I came upon this stuff, but ultimately it's just, I guess I was listening to an inner voice, for lack of a better word.
And so what did you come up with? Share it, because I think this is what moment.
Yeah, well, I think the beauty of it is that it applies to everyone, and it's openly, I want to bring this technology open source, because I think it's, you know, for those who care to look, and that's the thing, you know, some people would rather, watch reality TV and do whatever, and I'm not placing value judgments, but this is definitely, you could open universities around just this topic. It's almost, I don't want to say it's as great a paradigm shift as moving from, heliocentricity. And maybe it is, and maybe it's more. I mean, yes, it's definitely a move to focusing on the moon, but that doesn't necessarily make it lunar centricity.
Okay, so give us the meat. I'm drooling.
Well, I'm saying, Alan, there is some developmental issues to it. But what I've done essentially is to concretize this variable 400.679, so to bring it down to Earth, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So by doing that, it has the effect of opening up a new realm a new realm between the Earth and the Moon. And it's, some people have called it the new sphere. I think that's a pretty good terminology for it. But it's a realm that's composed of consciousness. And it's an alien realm, because it's not, you know, it's sort of like evolving from the water to the land, almost. It's kind of like a new medium, and you don't quite have the tools to navigate or to, I mean, most people don't. I've been doing this for 15 years, so I've actually become pretty skilled in getting my way around it. But
did I miss something? Getting your way around? Did you give it to us yet?
This new realm.
This new realm that you're going to tell us about.
Yes.
You haven't told us yet, though, right?
I'm laying the groundwork.
Okay. I'm hanging in there.
Yeah, it's a realm of consciousness. So it's a realm of ideas. It's a realm of information.
Okay.
And there are, you know, rules, ground rules, and mainly they're mathematic ground rules. Although math is sort of, I think, the place where spirit meets matter. And believe it or not, the math that people currently employ or that's generally accepted is not the best way to frame math itself. There's a whole nother way to frame it. And it, fundamentally, the difference is that instead of the whole number starting with number one, the whole number can start with the number two. And that's based on, like, just like human being in that we had two parents before that preceded us. So just like, you know, using that as a metaphor, you could say we only have half the truth mathematically. And the big step for people to move into this is to understand that there's a whole nother system of math that can come into play.
With base two, based on twos instead of one.
Exactly. With the notion that two is as valid a starting point as one is. And,
well, but don't the two always become the one?
Yes, and then you're getting into the Trinity and there is a whole area devoted to this in the work that I've done. I mean, fully half of the work I've done is theology. Or symbology, I guess you would call it. And, you know, the Trinity has a close relationship to unity. And all religions and all, you know, most religions, maybe not all, but most religions do have that in their symbology. They'll have the three-in-one idea, you know.
Definitely. No, it's in every religion, the threes.
It's in every religion.
Yeah.
Like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, you know, that's the Christian Trinity.
Right, and then there's Brahma, Shiva, Vishnu, and the Hindu.
There's like the yin-yang, which is sort of like, you know, black and white that are merging together to become more than either constituent. And that's,
right.
I mean, same with alchemy, you know, where as above, so below, where you have dualities, but yet there's something binding them together.
Mm-hmm. So, okay, let's get back to what you've discovered, okay? I guess this is part of it, but...
Well, what I've discovered, and it's not... I shouldn't say I've discovered it. It's really a comp... I've aggregated a lot of research from other places.
Uh-huh.
I've put it together. I've sort of, you know, I've got a good mixing board for it, but I don't want to take credit. I mean, everybody's done their work.
Some credit. Yeah, go ahead.
I've already done, you know... I've already introduced the idea of 50-50 as being sort of essential to human consciousness, but then I said I sort of doubt that as being the only constituent of human consciousness, because there'd be no way to grow if we were solely dual. There'd be no way to establish any structure.
Right.
So that's when in art school, I learned about the golden ratio. And
can you explain to people what the golden ratio is? Because I'm
not
sure.
Well, the golden ratio is a mathematical constant. And in my opinion, math only, they don't have it quite fully framed properly. But the current math would call the golden ratio 1.618033989, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
And how do they get that?
It's an irrational number like pi is, and everybody remembers pi.
Why is it so important? Why is that number so important? I think that's what you
Well, the golden ratio, that number is matched, in my mind, by its reciprocal, which is just 0.6180. And, you know, it's entirely arbitrary which one you're going to say is the golden ratio. Both
How do they come up with 1.6? How do they come up with that irrational number? Like, I know
you want to get into the history of it, it goes back to Euclid's day and the Pythagoreans, where it was known since antiquity, and you know, Euclid said that one of the two treasures of geometry was the division of a line into mean and extreme. and that's sort of a cryptic language, but it basically, it's a one, and Scott Olson actually, incidentally, has done a lot of great work on the golden ratio. He wrote a book called The Golden Section.
Scott Olson is I don't know his work. But,
yeah, Scott Olson. He wrote a wooden book.
But isn't the golden mean ratio, let's say, the ratio of, like, the elbow to the finger in relationship to
the
Leonardo da Vinci's drawing is all golden mean.
Well, yeah, the Vitruvian Man actually isn't based on the golden ratio. That's Leonardo da Vinci's drawing, the Vitruvian
Man. Right. Oh,
and
it's
that's
not.
Based on a, no, that's based on a Greek... I guess mathematician or...
But isn't the golden ratio the kind of ratio of all life forms? Isn't that...
Yes, it's evident in all of nature, but, and this is what I'm saying, it's evident in both its macro, in both its major and minor forms. So I call I distinguish phi major as 1.618 and phi minor as 0.618. And
okay.
Phi is the mathematical word for it. But
Yeah, tell me. Yeah, go ahead.
You can see it in plant formations, like the seed head of a sunflower. You can see it in certain shells, like the nautilus shell. They're not always. You can see it in certain horns of animals, like a ram's horn. You can see it in...
you see this ratio. This is a ratio that nature uses to create.
It
this is what you're saying.
Nature uses to create. You can see it in the human body, although, like I said, it's a loose approximation. There's no cut and dry rule, but it relates actually. You can see it interestingly in ancestry, like honeybees honeybee populations, where the females have to have a mother and father, but the males only have a mother. So if you map out their family trees, you'll see that it creates a Fibonacci sequence, which is will ultimately give you the golden ratio. And
how does the Fibonacci sequence relate to the golden ratio? Can you just explain that?
Sure. The Fibonacci sequence is what they call an additive sequence. So it begins 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. So in this kind of sequence, the latter term is the sum of the two preceding terms. So
right. So 1 plus 2 is 3, and then you add the 3 and the 2, that's 5, and then the 5 and the 3, that's 8. And that's the Fibonacci sequence, yes.
Fibonacci sequence, it goes back to a mathematician.
And how is that related to the golden mean ratio, though?
Well, if you do the division, like 5 divided by 8, you'll see it equals 0.6. And then if you do 8 divided by 13, you'll see it equals... as you do the division upwards in the additive sequence, ever more closely approximates the golden ratio. So by the time you're getting to the 10th or 11th term, you're pretty much already 4 decimal places into the golden ratio.
Oh, I see. That's interesting. I didn't realize that. Okay, now I'm with
you. Yes.
So what
did
you...
And actually...
Yes.
Actually, if you do it the other way, you know, if you do 8 by 5... then you get 1.618, or if you do 13 by 8, then you get, you know what I'm saying? So this is, the distinction of the golden ratio as being 1.618 is entirely arbitrary. It could just as easily be 0.618. It all depends on which direction you're doing your math. And,
okay.
And, you know, so, there's only recent stuff coming out about the golden ratio. It's been around for a long time, but, you know, a few books have raised the interest in it, like Mario Livio's book, and he takes a very mathematical approach to it, and then there's some mystical approaches that other people take, saying it was built into the pyramids and then to the Parthenon and this type of thing, which is debatable. I don't necessarily agree with that, but I do agree with the math of it and the fact that it is in nature. That's indisputable.
So then what does this have to do with the sun and the moon and the earth?
Well, like I said, it's an alternate way to see proportion. And I should make the distinction that 50-50 is a ratio, whereas the golden ratio is a proportion. They call it the golden ratio, but it's actually a proportion. And this is something that Scott Olson, a bone that he picks with the establishment. The golden ratio isn't a ratio, it's a proportion. But that's aside. In any event, in the golden ratio, you have a majority. So you have 0.618 versus 0.382. So because of that majority, that's what allows growth. Because there's a majority, And not only is there a majority, but it's a majority that respects the minority. In other words, it's a majority that sort of pays heed. And another way to phrase the golden ratio is that the lesser is to unity as unity is to the greater. And this is Scott Olson's verbiage again. But
what does this tell us about the nature of reality and who we are and our spiritual
well,
existence?
We are a fusion between these two ratios, believe it or not. Human consciousness isn't solely 50-50, and it isn't solely phi major minor. It is the fusion, and it is the transcendence of either side. So, I mean, some people are stuck in the 50-50, some people are stuck in the phi major minor duality, but if you're willing to smash those two ratios together, it will create a new understanding, a new self-understanding, a self-transcendence, I think you could call it. And in that, there are a lot of lessons to be learned, and we start to see how we haven't gotten the whole picture.
Well, what kind of lessons? Like, tell us. Let's go into something, okay? Tell us
the
lessons.
Well, the math lessons, I think. I think, you know, we're really using a primitive kind of math still that strictly is linear. It has no room for cyclical ideas. And I should mention that some of the applications I'm seeing from this, from my work, are just dumbfounding.
But you haven't told me anything related to your work. You just said there's the phi ratio, but I don't really get what your work is about.
Well, it's about self-understanding.
So give us a little example of how you use that for self-understanding.
Okay. Like I said, we have in our consciousness the ability to distinguish between heads and tails. So that is what I would call 50-50 intelligence. And then we have in our bodies and in our consciousness also this ratio of nature, the golden ratio, 1.618.
Okay.
Okay. So my great breakthrough came when I was looking at the symbol for phi, which is a circle divided in two by a line down the center.
That's the Greek symbol, right?
The Greek symbol phi, yes. And I was thinking, I learned about this in art school, that why is a symbol that expresses this numerical constant of 0.618, yada, 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 divided right down the middle, 50-50. I thought it was strange. I thought the symbol was strange because it's saying one thing and yet it means another thing. You know, visually it was sort of like...
Oh, so you're saying it doesn't mean 50-50, which means this kind of complex ratio, which is not 50-50. Okay,
yeah,
so you're saying...
But yet visually it's presented as 50-50.
Okay, so, I'm with you. Okay.
So that kind of created a disconnect. I was thinking, well, why don't they show it with, like, the line in the proper place to show, you know, but that's just kind of my artistic mind working overtime. And I ultimately came to the question, well, where would the line fall if the unseen side of this disc were taken into account?
Mm.
And in other words, you know, what would be the phi line of the whole? Rather than just the part that I'm being shown.
Oh, okay. So let me put... So since you're saying we have this 50-50 consciousness, yet behind that is really the phi ratio, you're saying behind the duality itself is really this life-giving essence, which is phi. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Well, phi is certainly life-giving, and like
but
I said...
We're trapped in the illusion of duality where that's not really the whole picture. The whole picture is what's behind that split, right?
Yes. Well, incidentally, the ratio of phi and 50-50 are closely related. And if you wanted to get this on a calculator, the best way to get phi on a calculator is to do 5 raised to the 0.5 times 0.5 plus or minus 0.5. So all those... 50-50 and phi are closely related. One sort of creates the other, you could say.
Okay. So
and
getting back
like
to
I,
this... Yeah, go
like
ahead.
Like I said, the plus or minus 5 would give you phi major or phi minor. So even that itself is a 50-50 decision. You know, do I add or do I subtract? And then, you know, you can visualize it even as a coin where you have a unity on one side, the big five, and then you have three little point fives on the other, on the flip side. So then it introduces a new duality where you have five fives. You know,
but
you have you're getting into fractals here, but I think that's a fascinating feature of phi major, phi minor.
It also sounds like a bit like crop circles, all these repeating five and sixes that are in.
Yeah, well, my work has kind of led me back instead of forward, and you know, I've studied a lot of the 2012 stuff, and I do agree that, you know, the fifth dimension is opening up. I think that also the zeroth dimension is opening up. As
what's
much as
that?
The fifth dimension, well, that's the dimension of sheer number. It's not we would call, geometrically, we would say a line is the first dimension, a plane is the second dimension, a cube is the third dimension, and a hypercube is the fourth dimension.
You should look at Nassim Haram's work. But anyway, so, but you're saying...
Yeah, I know some of his stuff.
He's coming to New York, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
On October 27th.
I'm in Queens, so...
Well, he'll be here.
If you want to check out the Queens.
No. Okay, so go ahead. So you just... hypercube...
Number itself is zero dimension.
Okay,
and
I gotcha.
It's you're getting into sheer binary. It's even precedes a point. I mean, a point... some people would say a point is the zeroth dimension, but yet a point is really just a circle. I mean, it's a solid circle, so maybe there's a distinction in that it has substance, whereas a circle doesn't have substance. But I've moved back. I've really refined things. So a lot of people are moving forward, and that's fine. I'm, like I said, back or forward, it's just another duality, but I've kind
Right, but you were getting to a point where you were saying if you look at the symbol for phi, and you imagined what was behind it, what did you come up with?
Well, I think it's interesting that, you can put this on a coin, five, a unity on one side of a big five, and then the trinity on the other side of three little point fives, and it gives you phi major minor as a coin toss, almost, you could say. So they are closely related, and this is to say that there isn't any kind of real opposition. They're just different takes. You know, 50-50 mentality is one thing, and phi major minor mentality is another thing. This isn't to say that they have to oppose. And like, it comes down to alchemy, where it really depends on how you frame it. If you frame it positively, then you can self-transcend. If you frame it negatively, then these things will mutually annihilate, and there will be no change. So,
wait, I missed something here. So I think, which is the essence of your work, how do you work with this stuff?
Well,
work with it?
I work with it mainly as I mentioned, I built this code up that really...
Yeah, no, you haven't mentioned it on this show, but
I haven't mentioned it yet. Well, using this central variable, 400.679, you know, the concretizing the coincidence, and then setting it in a framework where it is counterbalanced by phi, by the golden ratio, miraculously, I mean, that's what I feel anyway, over the years that I've done this research, has sort of grown organically into a symmetrical code, or, I don't want to say the word matrix. It's almost like, but yet it is undeniable in that it's perfectly symmetrical, and it's different. There are different levels to it. You know, right now I'm really talking from the bottom level of it, because that's sort of because I'm bringing it in to the public for the first time.
I appreciate that. But
I want to make this open source.
Well, no, but I want to get what it is that you actually discovered, because I'm not quite getting it.
Well, I already told you, I discovered a new realm of consciousness.
Oh, okay, that's what I want to talk about. So what is that realm? What does that look like, and where is it, and how do you describe it?
Well, the fundamental way to first describe it is to create the duality of a lower house and an upper house, so to speak. And a lot of people, I would say, are victim to a half-truth right now, where they believe something that's fundamentally true, And it's not when you look at it more closely.
Like what?
Well, the coin toss specifically. They believe that the a lot of people have this idea that probability and randomness are a property of an event. So if I ask you what the odds are that a coin toss will come up heads or tails, you would probably say 50-50, right?
And that's actually a lie because that doesn't come up 50-50. It comes up heads or tails, right?
Well, yes, that's the practical realization. But the reason math calls probability a theory, it's called probability theory. And incidentally, math and science use that word to denote the idea of falsifiability, that something is a theory because it's still open to falsification, meaning that it can be proven false. So, yes, 50-50, the theory of a coin coming up 50-50, that's one theory, and it's not to say that the theory is right or wrong, but people mistake the theory to be a part of the event. So they attach the theory to the event of a coin toss. And now if I were to get technical, I could say, well, the coin is probably imbalanced at some level. You know, some atomic level, there's going to be more atoms on one side than on the other. And if you did enough trials with that same coin, you would ultimately tease out the bias and be able to document, you know, in, you know, however many trillions of coin tosses, which we wouldn't have time to do, but just like a blatantly imbalanced coin, you would be able to tease out the bias with fewer coin tosses. So it's the same thing with any coin is an imperfect 50-50.
Mm-hmm. But I want to get to the theory of consciousness. So how does that relate to the theory?
Well, this is. Now, as I said, the 50-50 mentality is very interwoven with consciousness. So if everybody is subject to this half-truth that 50-50 is a property of a coin toss and the only property, then they're not getting the whole picture of consciousness. They're only getting half of the picture. So,
what's the whole picture of consciousness then?
Well, the whole picture comes in when you begin to understand, and there is some work on this. You can look up the boy or girl paradox on Wikipedia, but that sort of gives you a macrocosmic perspective, which isn't the greatest. The whole theory is that once you understand that probability is as much metadata about an event as it is a property of an event. So you could say, do you want me to repeat that? Or?
Probability, I think I got it, as much a metadata of an event as opposed to a property of an event. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Probability is just a map. It's not a territory, let's say. It's not the landscape. You're looking at a map, right? Of reality. You're not looking at reality.
It's a context. It's got two sides, probability itself. There's a side within a context and there's a side without a context or about a context. So I could give you a practical example, and this is something I'll do with people because it's interesting. Where if I ask you to pick a number between 1 and 10.
Yeah.
Let's do that. I ask you to
Okay.
And if you ask me the number, I'll tell you if you're right or wrong.
I'll ask you what number it is?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm asking you to pick a number?
I
picked a number, okay?
Okay, so tell me what it is.
8.
Oh, you're right. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to pick a number between 1 and 10 again, and I'm going to ask you what it is.
Okay. You want me to tell you this number?
Yeah.
3.
No.
It's not?
Pick again.
Want me to pick another number?
Yeah, it's the same. I want you to keep picking until you get it right.
Well, I think I only have between...
So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know what I mean? You can just do that if you would rather.
Yeah, okay. So any number between 1 and 10 I can pick.
Yeah.
And?
Yeah, keep picking until you get it. I'll tell you when you
get it right. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Yes, you're right, 8. So now pick a number between 1 and 10 again.
8?
Yes. Okay, so now pick a number between 1 and 10 again.
Okay, how about 8?
You got it. Okay, so now we could play this game 1,000 times.
What about all the other numbers between 1 and 10?
Well, this is the thing. You will soon forget that randomness is not a property of an event. Or it neither is nor is not a property of event. So you will come to see that number 8 as being somehow different than the other 9 numbers in the set. And it's essentially like in training, you know, if we did this game 1,000 times, by the 1,001st time, you would automatically say 8. And
uh-huh.
I could just say, well, no. But yet I could just count on you to say 8. Because
uh-huh.
you're assuming randomness to be a property of an event, or to be not a property of an event. The fact is that 8 is still a random number, even though I happen to be settling upon it. There is odds that that could happen. So,
right.
Yes, the odds are extremely unlikely. But you're not in a place where you can say it is or isn't random. I'm the one who's setting the rules of the game, and I'm the one who, you know, is terming that.
You're
that
setting random rules to a game that then I create into something. Isn't that how religions begin, sort of?
Well, yes, it is, actually. It's sort of conditioning, I guess, or entrainment, you could call it.
Yeah.
But it gives evidence to the weakness that exists. It's sort of, I call it a blind spot on the brain. People have a blind spot on the brain. And
well, they're afraid of being wrong, I think. If they want to be right, I think that's probably the blind spot. People want
well,
to
yeah,
be...
Well, that relates to religion, too, where, you know, everybody's concerned about what everybody else thinks. And I'm not anti-religious. I like religion. Actually, my background is Roman Catholic, and then but I have a Jewish mother, so it sort of has... I call myself a Budeo-Christian.
But anyway, so you're saying... But now get back to randomness, phi, the 50-50 ratio, the sun and the moon. How do you pull it all together into this new theory of consciousness? Because we only have about 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, you realize that there are two constituents to consciousness, 50-50 and phi, major, minor, and you realize how they're interrelated mathematically. And through this process of asking what's the unseen side and relaying the phi line when you account for the whole rather than just the half that you're being shown, then you realize that there is another level to jump to, so to speak, where there are two phi lines that are equally valid. One is a local, you could call it a local phi line, and the other is a global phi line. One phi line accounts for the face that you're shown, and the other phi line accounts for the whole, the coin as a whole. And that phi line technically would fall 0.764. And so this was the key. I mean, there were a couple other keys, but this was probably the biggest key that kind of led to this code development.
Okay, Dad, tell me about the code. What is the code all about?
Well, the code, as I said, has some of it takes from research done by Robin Heath, who's another Wooden Books author, and that's a good series if anybody has heard of the Wooden Books series. There's a few books about platonic solids and golden ratio and Earth, Sun, Moon coincidence and astronomy and other things. And so this code is, it has different levels. At least it's got two different ends, too. It's got a front end and a back end. You can call it two different sides, just like a computer code has a front end and a back end.
Well,
so
tell me a little bit, what is this a code for?
It's a roadmap to move through this new realm of consciousness up to the point where people will be ready to move to the back end, where it becomes speculative. So the back end isn't fixed, whereas the front end is fixed. And
well, let's talk about
it,
the front end first, though, so we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, the front end is just this mathematical constant of phi, major, minor, in different incarnations. So like I said, I have phi major, phi minor. There's four incarnations. There's the other incarnation, which I discovered. I call it phi micro, and that is this variable 0.1.
But how does it affect human perception and you? How does it directly affect human consciousness besides being...
Well, it affects... It's like getting the whole picture instead of half the picture.
Well, then what are we getting the whole picture of, though? I'm trying to
understand. Consciousness. Consciousness.
In what way? Can we go into some more detail?
All right.
It's
an informational realm. So it's almost like a new
element. Because I feel like the whole conversation, in a way, is about a missing piece that you're not telling us. So it's like you're demonstrating.
Oh, like I said, I don't want to blow my wad all at once.
Well, you're not blowing your wad, but it's nice to just connect and give us a little something to chew on.
Well, there is something at the top of the triangle, or the top of the pyramid, and that is when you work your way up through the levels. Like, if you look at the coincidence of the sun and moon having to match,
okay.
You can look at that more closely and say, well, it's a coincidence not only on the z-axis of, you know, how close the sun is to us, or the moon is to us, excuse me, but also, or actually the sun and the moon are to us, but actually it's a coincidence on the x-axis, it's a coincidence on the y-axis, and it's...
What does x and y stand for?
Vertical and horizontal, or horizontal and vertical, actually.
Okay.
So, you know, you're getting into some of the dynamics of astronomy here, where, like, things like lunar nodes and some of the other variables...
And solar planes.
Looking at... The main variables in the code are all organic, and that is to say that it's like a nodal year, a lunar synodic lunar month, which is 29.53 days, a tropical solar year, which is 365.242 days, perihelion, which is how close the sun is to the Earth, aphelion, which is how far the sun is from the farthest distance of the sun from the Earth, perigee, which is how the closest distance of the moon to the Earth. Aphelion.
Those are organic. You're saying that in a sense that these are organic, natural relationships.
Yes, and you use the right, that's the correct word, relationship, which means that even if I put it in miles or kilometers, it doesn't change the front end of the code, because the code is all based on relationships. It's not like it won't work with miles, but it will work with kilometers. And I mean, that's kind of interesting in itself, because America is the only country that, you know, measures in miles compared to the rest of the world.
Well, I think England does, actually.
Maybe England, yeah. America's an interesting country. I love America, but it's definitely a defiant country in regards to the rest of the world.
But I'm interested in this code. So what, because you really haven't told us that much, how will it help people widen their perception and create a new view of reality?
It creates a new ground, a new realm. Which
In what way?
It's a roadmap, an informational way, in a way, it's a form of time travel. Almost.
Yeah, well, tell me that. How? I'm not getting it. I mean, I want to know how.
Like I said, if I had a camera, I could actually show you the code and you know, lead you through it. Right now, we're still on the bottom level. You got to realize there's, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 levels to the front end. So it's sort of like in the ancient Greece, where they would start temples along the Nile or ancient Egypt, to educate people about these things and the hermetic centers and all that, because it's just that big. It's almost like I need a school and I have to train teachers in different areas to even get about moving up the ladder. But, you know, if you want something to chew on, the beauty of it is at the top of the front end, where you learn that exactly how probability is not a property of an event. And there are a couple ways to know it already through research on, like, Wikipedia with the Boyer-Girl paradox.
Boyer-Girl? How do you spell that? Boyer?
Boy-or-Girl paradox.
Oh, Boy-or-Girl paradox on Wikipedia. Okay, I'm going to look that up. And so,
you can also look at, in the micro level, you could look at fair results from a biased coin, or fair results from a weighted coin, because that plays...
Is that a book?
Now, you can also look that up on Wikipedia. It's just a short entry, on Wikipedia.
Boy, oh, God.
Fair results from a biased coin. Because the truth is, all coins are biased at some level. Are biased, yeah.
Meaning what?
Meaning that they must be weighted towards one face or the other face. Even at some distant micro level.
And that affects the toss of coins.
It does, however, in however minute a way. But what one thing that this person on Wikipedia has discovered is that tossing a coin twice will give you a more accurate 50-50 than tossing a coin once. So that's a big piece.
What about tossing it 100 times? Won't that give us more accurate?
Well, no, because... you can never know the ultimate truth of whether 50-50 exists, because we can't toss a coin infinitely. So no matter how perfectly balanced the coin is, we would assume at some physical level it's going to break down.
But if you toss a coin 100 times and it comes up 50 times heads, 50 times tails, wouldn't that prove the 50-50?
Not really, because that's an arbitrary number, 100. The only thing that would prove it is tossing it twice, because the theory says if you toss it once or twice, you should get one head and one tail. But yet, in reality, it'll show you that you get that half the time. You get contradictory faces half the time, and the other half the time, you get either two heads or two tails. So
right.
That theory is flawed, too, you know, because every time you toss a coin twice, you're not necessarily going to get a head and a tail.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what this guy on Wikipedia has shown is that a coin's bias doesn't switch between tosses, so it's actually more accurate. It's a truer 50-50 event to toss a coin twice, and assuming you get a difference, to take the second result.
Okay, so we're almost out of time. So tell us then, the sun and the moon, this new code of consciousness, the 50-50 thing, give us a little something that will affect our view of reality that we can take home, and then when we see your name again, David Clapperton, we'll say, oh yeah, I heard that. So give us a little something. Give us anything, David. Anything.
I've given a lot, but I will say I plan to introduce people to themselves. This code would introduce.
But how? How? I don't get how.
By showing you your own blind spot, essentially.
But what would that blind spot be?
The idea that 50-50 is a property of a coin toss when it's only half true.
Okay.
It's one property of a coin toss, but it isn't the only property of a coin
okay,
toss.
Okay, how does that relate to the sun
other,
and moon? How does that relate
well,
to
that's
the
where the sun and moon has created this dualistic ideology that people have. So
that doesn't about day and night, male, female, hasn't that created?
Yeah, exactly. All this dualistic types of thinking can be traced back to the fact that, you know, these subtle forces, and in ancient times, our ancestors, you know, didn't understand this stuff mathematically, but they just sort of assumed, like, wow, the sun is the ruler of the day and the moon is the ruler of the night. You know, like they ascribe them equal weight in terms of religion and symbols or whatever.
Isn't this related to Advaita non-dualism in the Hindu tradition, meaning that there is no such thing as probability or duality? You know what Advaita is?
I know what you're saying.
It's don't divide the world up into the assumptions of polarities and dualities. The world is only a singularity in a way. It's all one. That's what Advaita
means. Transcending it is the magic of it. I mean, not many people have transcended it. And if you look at your own biases, I mean, I have my biases that subtle things that insinuate their way into my opinions and my personality.
Uh-huh.
And whatever it might be, you know, Republican, Democrat, that kind of thing. Like, you know, I'm trying to be easy on Sarah Palin. Part of me just wants to hate her.
Well,
you don't
have to hate her, but she's not a very competent person, you know? I mean, doesn't mean you have to hate her.
There's another part of me that just keeps that side in check and says, give her a chance. Don't be too hard on her.
Well, you don't have to give her a chance because I don't think she's qualified.
It sounds like you have
I haven't seen any qualifications come out of her, but we don't want to get into the whole political, we're just about out of time, but so you're saying everyone has these blind spots that need to be challenged.
Yes, exactly, and it's not only need to be, it can be empirically shown, and what I'm holding back on is the mesocosmic way to empirically show it. I've sort of given the
What do you mean by mesocosmic? Can you explain that?
I mean the middle road. And this is the secret at the top of the code, is that there's a middle road by which you can also empirically prove probability not to be a property of an event. So I've given the macro and the microcosm now. The macrocosm, look at the boy or girl paradox, and the microcosm, look at the fair results from a biased coin, both on Wikipedia. And that'll give you an idea. But the mesocosmic way is really the beauty. And that's where you really see how we've had it wrong well, not wrong, but only half right, I guess would be a better way to put it.
Okay, so you're going back to the sun and moon. You're saying the sun and moon, the 400 thing, is purely a coincidence of nature, or was it a planned action by some greater intelligence? I think you did say something. What did you say?
I would say it's a design.
Okay, we have to wrap
now,
it up.
This is where the book The Privileged Planet ran into a lot of controversy, because some people accuse it of being ID in disguise, you know, intelligent design.
Okay, we actually are out of time, but we will get back to you at some point once I digest everything you've said right now.
Yeah,
so,
well, like I said, you gotta see the camera, because you know, you gotta actually
so
see the.
So we'll do a television thing. Do you have a website or email people can contact you?
I do have a website that I'm developing. I have my business website, which just has a client that I've developed websites for. But right now, I'm developing a website based on. I took the word of this guy who coined a phrase called named Jay Kotze. He coined a phrase, synchromysticism. So I registered that domain.
Synchromysticism. I'll get people in touch when I describe this as a podcast. I'll let people know about that. David, thank you for, sharing some of your investigations into this realm of consciousness and experience.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to get to bring it out a little bit.
Yeah, we'll do more. We'll do more, because I think really we just got to the surface. I've been talking to David Clapperton. I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Go to newrealities.com, my website. Check my archives of all these past shows and pbsradio.com and on newrealities.com. If you want to email me, I am at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thank you for listening, and I'm going to have some great guests in the next couple of weeks, and stay tuned.